Today I'm welcoming Ruth Cadbury. You're the Labour MP for Hounslow and Isleworth and Chair of the Transport Committee to Radio Jackie. So good afternoon, Ruth.
Good afternoon.
So firstly, in the light of the discussions in Parliament over the sad case of Henry Novak dying in custody, do you have any comment on the way forward after the violence in Southampton and the plea from Henry's parents not to let his death fuel more unrest?
Well, I think there was coming together in the Commons with Keir Starmer, Kemi Badenoch, and Ed Davey, the leader of the Lib Dems, absolutely condemning the division that I think reform is fueling, and commending Henry's father for being absolutely clear not to use this terrible crime as a way to fuel division among communities. There's obviously got to be a serious inquiry into what happened at the actual with the police, but also this is not a community, this cannot be seen as a community issue. The murderer, for that is what he is, has been sentenced to prison. He's certainly not representative of the Sikh community, and even his grandmother has been very concerned about, his general, she had concerns about him, and it's very, very worrying that this is being fueled to fueled in a way that we now see what feels like a riot on our streets in Southampton, and it's just not acceptable. I mean, it's appalling, and we had that, that those terrible murders of those little girls in Southport, and again we had riots by people who had formed themselves as violent thugs, to use tragic, appalling crimes to start reading other community division and tropes into this is really, really worrying in our communities at this time.
So let's go on to you with your transport hat on. SWA were proudly announced as the first rail operator to be nationalised, and thus far, many of their new Arterial fleet of trains are sitting in a siding. I actually went on one of their trains when it was introduced at Waterloo Station, and very impressive they are too. But many of them are not being used, and services across SWR, people are saying, are worse than ever. So, what are the plans for SWR going forward?
Well, SWR came into public ownership, I think, sometime last year. The arterios are finally being rolled out, and we're increasingly now seeing them on the my line that I get in to Waterloo now, on the Hounslow Loop line. The problem is that in SWR in private ownership, the new managing director of SWR has told me that they delayed recruitment of new train drivers. They delayed the recruitment of and the training of drivers for arterios because you need some months training to be able to have a driver qualified to drive a new kind of train. SWR in the past didn't do that in time. As soon as the new managing director came on board, Lawrence Bowman, he picked that up. He doubled the recruitment quota for new drivers. He immediately increased the quota on driving, on training. Of course, when you take drivers out of service to get them trained, there wasn't enough headroom capacity with drivers sitting in the mess room in case they were needed. There wasn't the cap so we lost capacity on the line while drivers were off being trained on the arterios. That is gradually working its way through, and what Lawrence Bowman has told me is that they expect to be up to a re fully reliable service by the end of this year. So, in a way, the situation we're facing, which I believe is beginning to get better, but it's not fully up to speed yet. But I believe that we need to give this time, because the current SWR is suffering from decisions not made under the previous management.
A spokesperson for South Western Railway and Network Rail Wessex has said, since transferring to public ownership, we've accelerated the rollout of our new arterial fleet. 47 trains are now in regular service, delivering over 600 services a day, with more than 500 guards and 600 drivers trained. We are on track to have 50 arterials in service this summer. Each arterial offers 50% more capacity than the trains they replace, along with air conditioning, Wi-Fi, power at every seat, accessible toilets, and real-time information screens. The arterials have already boosted capacity into London Waterloo by over 25%, with some of our routes now fully served by arterial trains. We are also expanding our recruitment and training of brand new drivers, including 144 new drivers this year alone, which will help increase the resilience of our train operations. Together with our plan to refresh our timetable, these targeted measures will deliver meaningful long-term improvements to the reliability of our services. So still on trains, plans for Great British Railways, GBR, they're going to be rolled out. They're going to simplify everything. So it's going to be 14 separate train operators. Passengers will be able to get tickets and use a railway, all put together. And actually, in the light of the announcement of this great new theme park in Bedfordshire, is a train going to take the strain, and are people going to be able to get one ticket for the journey they want from anywhere in the country?
Well, taking GBR, Great British Railways, first, I mean, that very much in our manifesto to bring the railways and the bulk of passenger services into public ownership. That is well underway. The Railways Bill is working its way through Parliament in order to provide the legislation for that to happen. It'll mean we'll have consistent standards and oversight. We'll have timetables that are aligned, and the planning will be aligned under a single organisation with regional sectors. But track and train will be managed together, as is now happening on South West Rail. And trains are going to be run in the interests of passengers, not shareholders. It's not going to be a silver bullet. Nationalisation in itself doesn't solve all of the problems, but it needs a consistent culture, a consistent management. I hope in the long run that we will have a more accountable and a more reliable journey for passengers going forward. And in terms of the new theme park, we've got a specific challenge there is a challenge on East West Rail, that we've got a perfectly good trains and a rail line ready to go, and there's still some things to format, which I am concerned that there shouldn't be delays. Again, I think it's a legacy of a privatised railway, and I hope we won't get into those sort of problems before, because wherever possible, if we're going on a day out, with our family, with our friends, it's so much better to go by train. And consistent ticketing is the other issue that we will have under GBR, and not so many different ticketing options and different loyalty schemes that don't talk to each other.
Let's move on into local elections in Hounslow. Labour's majority was reduced to one. Conservatives made big gains. What do you think this is saying?
I think it's, there's no doubt, it's a wake-up call. And I think it's a shame, because I think Hounslow is a well-run council in very difficult circumstances. All councils, particularly in London and other urban areas, a lot of deprivation. They've had huge amounts of funding taken away from them by the Conservative government. They're expected to do more with less. And I think in those difficult circumstances, I think Hounslow has been run. And it's a shame we didn't get the message out better. We've got some kind of odd results. We had Conservatives elected in what's always been a Labour heartland in Hounslow town, in and around the town of Hounslow. So, yeah, I think I think Labour has a majority of two on Hounslow Council now. Yeah, as no doubt it was worse than we expected. But you know, under Shantanu Rajoyat, we still have a Labour leadership, and I hope so he's you know, continues the good work that he and his team have been working on up till now.
Yeah. So you yourself are in Makerfield today. You've written about your support for Keir Starmer as Prime Minister. In the light of Andy Burnham running and getting elected in Makerfield, would you still support Sir Keir Starmer if he was running against Andy Burnham? And you've said you disagree with Tony Blair's take that a policy change is needed rather than a politician. What policies do you think Andy Burnham could bring in that would make such a difference?
Okay, that's a series of questions. I wrote, as did over 100 of my colleagues, straight after the council elections, to encourage Keir to stay. That you know, now is not the time to ditch the Prime Minister. Our international reputation, in fact, Keir's reputation internationally has been good. The markets, the economy. They need stability if we're really to consolidate on the growth that this country has started. So at that time, I really didn't want us to go into a leadership election. You know, I thought we should work on where we are with the Prime Minister we have, and understand, because a lot of the reasons people, I didn't get a lot of anti Keir Starmer on the doorstep, or all that much anti-Labour, but you know, we have to look at, you know, the messaging, the policies. Are we joining up our policies properly, and so on. And just changing a leader may not change that. But anyway, we are where we are. We don't know what's going to happen in the Makerfield by-election. We don't know what will happen. So if Andy Burnham wins, will Keir Starmer stand down? There's too many what ifs, and you can't, you know, we can't predict the future. I hope we don't have a bloody and disabling leadership contest, because, say, looking from an outside view, you know, from other countries, and the importance of stability in the UK, you know, I hope we get this situation over and done with, one outcome or another. We get it done soon, and we can go back to delivering. We've only been back in power 2 years. There's a lot of work to do to undo the damage of the past, particularly on our public services. And you know, things like the NHS are really starting to turn around. We're beginning to see those green shoots of recovery. So I really wanted us to get back to you know, to that work, and not spend too much time on a leadership election. I'm in Makerfield today because, as a Labour MP with a national by-election, it's really important we, you know, we vote for the Labour candidate. You know, reform, I think, a deeply damaging negative party. Reform has been atrocious in the councils where it has taken power. They're not really, I would say, grown-up politicians. They actually are more concerned with slogans and division than with actually taking responsibility for the difficult decisions that people in this country need around the cost of living, public services, and growing the economy. I don't believe that Reform are serious politicians, and that's why, you know, I'm here in Makerfield.
Okay, let's go on to more local issues. I understand parents of SEND children in Hounslow concerned about promised resources that may not materialise. What are their concerns and how have you addressed them?
I think all across the country, parents of children with special needs for years have got increasingly concerned about the service and support that their children get, the hoops they have to go through to get the EHCP, which, when granted, should give your child additional resources, maybe more time with one-to-one support in school, maybe special additional therapeutic care like speech therapy, or other support. It may mean that your child's needs are such that you need to go into a special school, or it may be that you just need your child needs more support in a mainstream school. But and the system hasn't worked, and it has failed children, it's failed their families, and it's also failed the other children in schools who are having to and the teachers who are having to, you know, teach more children with more special needs without the additional support. So it's been really, really, really difficult for a number of years. I think all across the country, parents welcome that Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, is doing this review. I think they welcome the principle that wherever possible, children in mainstream school, but that mainstream schools get extra support themselves so that they get extra teaching assistance and specialist support. And so I think there's generally support for the principles of Bridget's review. The concern, as ever, is, well, will the money follow the promise?
Yeah. Shall we talk about Brentford, the community cafe?
Yeah.
It overlooks the pitches in Gunnersbury Park. What is it offering and how is it funded?
Well, this is Brentford Football Club's Community Sports Trust, which is one of the most successful of what we used to call football in the community of any club in the country. And I've been with them since, you know, the year dot when I was a young councillor and we were working together with the local police and youth service on keeping youngsters on the estates in Brentford occupied in the long school holidays. And, you know, Lee Doyle was around then and he's now the chief exec of the Community Sports Trust at Brentford Football Club. So for anyone who knows Gunnersbury Park, it's a lovely park, it's enormous. There are these pitches, courts, five-a-side pitches on Gunnersbury Park, and overlooking it is this lovely building with a gym in it and a new cafe run by the trust. It's funded by a number of organisations, including the Premiership and the Football Foundation, but also Asahi, the brewery, who run Chiswick Brewery down the road, and others have supported this cafe. And it's a community cafe. The people serving there are supported by a homeless charity that helps get people back on their feet. So they're given training in working cafes and the barista training, and then they provide community activities, a dementia memory cafe, and a number of different activities. It's also a warm, nice place for parents to go and sit while their kids are doing football or other sports training. And, you know, I would have loved to have something like that when I was watching my sons doing junior football. That the idea to be able to sit in the warm and dry, to be able to more or less see what they're doing, but drink a nice cup of coffee, that would have been great. So it's got a range of different activities going on, and it's open to the public, except I think when there's specific activities going on. So yeah, it's a really nice offer in Gunnersbury Park. They're such a great club. The Community Sports Trust is wonderful. And of course, the club itself supports that cafe as well. And the players have come in and helped out and supported some of the activities there. So there's a very close connection between the club and the trust. And, it was lovely to be there at the celebration of its opening. And for Lee Doyle to explain and his team explain what they do there.
Let's move on to Q Station. You successfully campaigned for step-free access at Q Station. What's the timescale for this and what changes are going to be made to the station?
Well, if anyone has ever gone to Kew Bridge Station, they'll know that you've got two rather old staircases down to the platform and a very big step between the platform and the train itself. So we've been campaigning on this for years. I'm really pleased that the Labour government has committed to fund all of the cost of the lifts and new staircases at the station. So it will be fully accessible off Lionel Road North, which is beside the entrance to the Brentford Stadium, and that the Hounslow are hopefully going to find enough funds from various planning agreements to address we don't know how much it'll cost, but the other urgent thing, which is to address this enormous step and to reduce that, basically to reduce the height that people have to step up onto the train, because it's the worst on the line as far as I'm concerned. So hopefully this will happen By the end of this year, I think, if not early next year. So, it's going apace, and you can see it's happening on other stations. I can see that the work's being done on Wandsworth Town at the moment. So I hope that work will start very soon.
Good. Just quickly, have you got time to talk about vehicles? So, UK policy to ban all hybrid and ICE vehicles, which are internal combustion engines, by 2030. The EU seems to rein back on it and change its mind a bit. Do you think we have the charging infrastructure to support this, as we still use electricity from gas, a lot of it is LPG, which we get from the US, which is a lot dirtier than our own natural gas from the North Sea?
Okay, so the Transport Committee that I chair has just been doing an inquiry into the charging infrastructure for electric vehicles. And you're right, it's actually the sale of new petrol and diesel engines will end in is it 2030?
2030.
It'll be the ending of the sale of new petrol and diesel vehicles, and so that all new vehicles sold in the country will be it will be EV. So we've been, as the Transport Committee that I chair, has been looking at the charging infrastructure and also the cost, because if you're lucky enough to live in a house with off-street parking and you can install an EV charging plug point, then the cost of charging is at low domestic overnight charge rates. It's pennies, pennies for a charge. But it's with the VAT and the individual charging costs, it's a lot greater if you have to charge in a public place. And also, although London and outer London and I think the Thames Valley is well served by public charging infrastructure, supermarkets, service stations, and other car parks, and so on. A lot of England is not well served because there isn't a consistent national policy as there is, say, in France and I believe in Scotland. So, I mean, we haven't come to a conclusion to our inquiry, but certainly we're noticing that price differential and that differential depending where in England you are as to how good the charging infrastructure is. So we're beginning to see the price of new cars coming down, particularly as a lot of imports as and but what the manufacturers need is consistency of policy, and what they were not happy about was the chopping and changing under the Conservative government, because they were sort of fast forward, moving ahead fast on in building EVs and modifying their factories and production lines and so on, and therefore their supply lines. And then it was, oh no, we're not in a rush, we're not in so much of a rush. And it's like, well, that doesn't work for us, because they work 5 plus years ahead in order to get things lined up. So what I would hope is a consistency of policy and a consistency of incentive to support people. What I'd also like to see is some way of ensuring that anybody can afford to run an EV, afford to buy and or use an EV, because they are out of reach to many low-income families who need a car.
And there's huge variation in the consistency of the charges you get at wherever you go to charge.
Yeah, whereas if you were, say, to drive across France, you
Oh,
would the
yeah.
expectation of a working charge point, and obviously we know, on the motorways in France, there's a service point every 10 kilometers, and then a
Absolutely.
full service station every 50. But you
Yeah.
can tell that that's a result of state policy, and we don't have that to the same extent in the UK. It's a tricky thing to shift, but policy directional.
Yeah.
But at the moment, the price differential is too great for new. And I mean, yeah. But I mean, as I say, it's new cars. Petrol and diesel cars will still be allowed. There'll still be petrol flowing at the petrol station, so it's not like they're going to be banned.
I will let you
Working.
go and have a good afternoon. Thank you for coming on to
Lovely.
Radio Jackie, and I look forward to catching up with you after the by-election, probably.
Well, thank you very much, Jackie. Nice to speak to you.
Thank you,
Bye.
Ruth. Bye for now.